Welcome to the What Matters Most podcast, presented by First United Bank and Trust. That's my bank. Visit us today at mybank.com.
Hello and welcome to What Matters Most, a podcast all about finances, community, savings, and security for you, your family, and your business. This podcast is brought to you by the helpful folks at MyBank, First United Bank and Trust. I'm your host, Eric Nutter, and in today's episode, What Matters Most is our monthly economic discussion. And for this, I am thankful to be joined remotely again today by Brad Bolliard, Portfolio Manager in First United's Wealth Management Department. Hey, Brad, how's it going this morning?
Good, Eric. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. I appreciate you joining me. The sun is shining and things are things are looking good. I guess, as always, we get together once a month with you or Sean or Megan and talk about the market, and you give us the positives and negatives. So why don't you kick us off with some good news? What's the positives in the market right now, Brad?
Yes, certainly. You know, I want to go over the three areas, our positives and negatives. And also I want to conclude with some of our current strategies. And we'll start out with some of the positives, start on a positive note. The U.S. added 916,000 jobs in March, and that's actually the biggest gain in 7 months.
Nice.
So with everything that's been happening, we do have some very positive jobs numbers in terms of the gains that we're seeing. The unemployment rate fell to 6% from 6.2%. The largest increase in hiring was concentrated, of course, when you're just thinking about what's starting to reopen, restaurants, leisure, and hospitality. As more states, they ease their restrictions on customer limits and public gatherings. Also, more other industries added workers. Restaurants at the forefront, they actually created 176,000 new jobs.
Wow.
So more Americans are going out to eat, and the numbers are expected to grow as most of the country gets vaccinated. And of course, spring has arrived, so warmer weather. So people are more eager to get out there after being stuck at home for over a year, really now, almost 14 months. Employment and construction bounced back after a decline in February that was tied to, of course, the poor weather then. Builders hired 110,000 people, the largest increase in 9 months. Soaring home sales and revival in commercial construction are fueling the biggest industry boom in more than a decade there in that area. And of course, the problem right now is really just finding enough skilled workers for that area. Of course, everybody wants big ticket items right now with interest rates, with the interest rates being so low. I want to go over some of the supply management, manufacturing, and service industry numbers for March. And they are both reporting record levels. The manufacturing index jumped to 64.7% in March, and that's a 38-year high. New orders, 68%. Production, 68%. Backlog of orders, 67.5%. Employment, 59.6%. And when I throw out those percentages, please remember that anything above the 55% level, which all those numbers were, is considered exceptional growth. So, you know, once you get above that 50 number, then you're looking at growth territory. But really, that's exceptional when you're looking at numbers 55% or more. Of the 18 manufacturing industries tracked by the ISM, 17 had expanded in this past month. Business conditions are positive for industries and companies. The constraints are mainly related to parts availability. According to one senior executive I was listening to at a transportation equipment maker, manpower, again, is also a constraint. Hiring new members is a challenge. Growth should remain very strong, though, over the next few months as consumers continue to spend their stimulus funds. People feel more comfortable going out and businesses reopen. U.S. manufacturers will benefit from strong domestic and foreign economic growth. On the service side, the service index jumped to 63.7% in March, an all-time high for the survey. That's the highest level on record since the ISM began the survey in 97. It doesn't mean service-oriented companies are doing better than ever, though. So just remember that we're looking at improvements, improvements from between February and March, especially strong. Of course, when you're coming off a pandemic, you're looking at strong numbers.
Right.
Production 69.4%, new orders 67.2%, employment 57.2%, all rose, while backlog orders 50.2%, new export orders 55.5%. They remained in that expansion territory. Respondents' comments indicate that the lifting of COVID-19-related restrictions has released pent-up demand for services, production capacity constraints, material shortages, weather and challenges in logistics, and human resources have caused some supply chain disruption, but all 18 service industries tracked by the ISM expanded in March. And that's a rarity, even in the best of times, really. Again, new orders and production made big leaps as each index also hit the highest levels of records. Business is picking up as mandated restrictions seem to be easing, and spring has arrived. So the final report of the fourth quarter 2020 GDP number has showed that the U.S. economy increased at a 4.3% annual rate, and a healthy sign of sustained strength. That's after the third quarter bounce back. The increase was 0.2 percentage points higher than the second estimate that was released in February. So the GDP Now model estimate for real GDP in the first quarter of 2021, which we don't know the exact number yet, but that estimate is 8.3% as of April 16th. Job openings in the U.S. rose in February to the highest level in more than 2 years at 7.37 million. According to the JOLTS survey, job openings rose the most in February in healthcare, hotels, restaurants, theaters, museums, and parks and recreation. The quit rate is also back to pre-crisis levels, and many companies are looking to hire workers in anticipation of the economy strengthening as, of course, the populace gets vaccinated. Let's look at consumer confidence on the positive side of our economic review. For March, they actually blew out expectations. Consumer confidence now at a 109.7, and that's up from a 90.4 in February. That's actually the highest reading during this whole pandemic, which tracked in the 130s prior to March 2020. The yield curve, a very good indicator of economic health. The yield curve is positive in general, mostly because of the large spread on the long end of the curve. The 10-year is at 1.589% when I looked earlier today. The 30-year at a 2.3%. The Fed continues, of course, with their whatever-it-takes mentality. They do expect to keep the federal funds rate in its current range of 0 to 0.25% until inflation has risen to 2% and is on track to exceed that number for some time. Also, according to their definition, until labor market conditions have reached levels which they regard as consistent with full employment encompassing the Fed's long-term unemployment projection of 4.1%, which I said earlier, it's above 6%, along with higher labor force participation and stronger wage growth. And general yields have drifted higher, especially in the first quarter, as growth has picked up.
Awesome, Brad. So lots of great news, lots of strong positive numbers, and things are looking really good, but I'm sure it's not all roses. We've got some negatives to share.
Yeah, of course. COVID-19 virus, that remains the most important driver of economic growth this year. Outside the U.S., case growth weighted on global virus-related sentiment and ongoing health concerns related to the AstraZeneca vaccine that has potentially delayed herd immunity that's outside the U.S. In the U.S., daily vaccinations surpassed 4 million actually recently, and the weekly average is over 3 million. As the president has announced, all U.S. adults will qualify for vaccines, and that was as of yesterday, actually April 19th. A pause by the FDA for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, as you've probably heard in the news, that was due to blood clotting issues that may delay some timelines in the U.S. But vaccines have thus far been effective against the virus mutations. That could be a risk as we move forward, some of those mutations. But our base case remains that vaccination will be effective and will allow for accelerated economic growth by the middle of this year. U.S. unemployment claims sank by 193,000 earlier this month to a fresh pandemic low, an unusually large decline that reflects an improving economy. Initial jobless claims filed traditionally through the states fell to a seasonally adjusted 576,000 from 769,000 the prior week. However, I did want to include this on the negative side because, you know, when you're talking about jobless claims, of course, a negative, and the decline is not quite as good as it looks, though. An additional 5.2 million who have exhausted state compensation were getting benefits through an emergency program funded by the federal government. Altogether, the number of people reported reportedly receiving benefits from eight separate state and federal programs has put an unadjusted 16.9 million as of March 27th. So there's still a lot of people on those special state and federal programs that are receiving jobless benefits out there. But that number is down. That number's down for 18.2 million from the prior week. There's actually fewer than 2 million people that were getting those benefits before the pandemic erupted. So you can see why I've still included that on the negative side of my review. The 4-week moving average was 683,000, a decrease of 47,250 from the previous week's revised average of jobless claims. This is the lowest level for the average since March 14, 2020, when it was 225,500. And the previous week's average was revised up from 6,500 from 723,000 to 730,000. Valuations and bonds and stocks are elevated right now. Interest rates are historically low. And with current inflation rates, real rates are negative. Most conventional metrics suggest global equities are expensive relative to their own history. Inflation concerns, of course, you've seen a lot of that in some of the economic financial news, that they will most likely continue to be top of mind for investors through the entirety of this year. The core PPI, producer price index, rose 3.1% year over year in March, for example, the highest level since September 2018. We continue to think that higher inflation levels will be a cyclical phenomenon, though, and not structural in nature. But higher than expected reports over the next several months that will cause some market moving volatility. But after going over some of the positives, and not as many negatives really this time, in terms of length of what I wanted to say. But in summary, I do want to kind of go over really summarize the economic equity area of the market, and then the fixed income area of the market, and then give you our current strategies based on what's happening. On the equity side, really the post-World War II shift to peacetime economy may be the closest historical analog to the upcoming post-COVID era, where vaccination and reopening gained steam over the course of this past year and of course into the next year. So if you're looking at a time to compare, that's kind of what really historically that we're looking at. But there's a lot of good things happening with the passage of the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan Act and most expectations for U.S. GDP growth in 2021. They now exceed 6%, which would be the best economic growth here in the U.S. since 1984, actually. Though economic growth is expected to be strong, there are multiple risks that we are currently watching. First, COVID variants that vaccines can't control could wipe away the recovery. Secondly, increased inflation levels are expected, but if levels exceed expectations or start to become more structural and less cyclical, they could cause the Fed to act sooner than expected. And thirdly, financial market valuations remain elevated, and if earnings underwhelm expectations, volatility, of course, could quickly ensue. In portfolios, in general, we remain cautiously optimistic with a moderate overweight to equities that focus on that cyclical assets. On the fixed income side, the U.S. 10-year Treasury yields jumped more than 80 basis points during the first quarter, continuing their recovery from record lows during the 2020 recession. Rising inflation expectations and real yields drove the increase in nominal yields, representing expectations for recovery in both real growth and higher inflation. The real cost of borrowing, though, remained negative, while inflation expectations rose to their highest level since 2013. The Federal Open Market Committee continues to reaffirm its dovish stance despite higher projections for economic growth. The Fed has also ruled out the need to contain long-term rates, noting very easy financial conditions overall. Tapering of asset purchases and interest rate increases are a long way off. So in general, to look at our strategy, currently we are modestly underweight cash. We are neutral fixed income. We are focused on quality, not purchasing anything less than a Moody's Baa1 S&P BBB investment grade rating. We are selective on taxable and tax-free munis. or modest underweight to high yield. Usually you don't see as many defaults in high yield after the initial default phase has passed, but we are seeing a few downgrades in the energy sector when looking at corporates and colleges in the muni area. Judicious use of preferreds, around 2% of portfolios. Equities, we are modest overweight with election results and regulatory changes that have been made. We prefer healthcare and industrials over energy and real estate, for example, but also with more big ticket item purchases due to low rates, we're leaning towards financials and less so to consumer staples and utilities. So that's kind of summarizing really basically everything there for you, Eric, and our audience, our positives, our negatives, our conclusion on equities and fixed income, and summarizing with our current strategy and weightings on the three main areas, cash, fixed income, and equities. I did want to remind everybody that, you know, if you need to reach us, of course, you can go to mybank.com and go to the wealth management department selection there, or also, you know, simply call into our call center and ask to speak to one of our trust officers, and they will be able to schedule an appointment with you or phone call with you if you prefer at this time on talking about any investment needs that you might have, 401k rollovers, and so on. And we will set you up appropriately depending on your location.
Awesome. Brad, thank you so much for joining me today and giving such helpful insights. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely, Eric. It's always a pleasure to do this call and be there for our clients and give them this monthly update. And nice talking to you today.
Yeah, you too. You too. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. You can always find more episodes by visiting mybank.com/podcast or find us on your favorite podcast app. You can always leave feedback, ask questions, or request a topic for us to discuss by sending an email to podcast@mybank.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with more helpful content. But until then, we wish you the best in focusing on what matters most to you.
First United, my bank for life.
This document is a general communication being provided for informational purposes only. It is educational in nature and not designed to be taken as advice or a recommendation for any specific investment product, strategy, plan, feature, or other purpose in any jurisdiction, nor is it a commitment from First United Bank and Trust or any of its subsidiaries to participate in any of the transactions mentioned herein. Any examples are generic, hypothetical, and for illustration purposes only. This material does not contain sufficient information to support an investment decision and should not be relied upon in evaluating the merits of investing in any securities or products. In addition, users should make independent assessment of the legal, regulatory, credit, and accounting implications and determine together with their own professional advisors if any investment mentioned herein is believed to be suitable to their personal goals. Investors should ensure that they obtain all available relevant information before making any investment. Any forecasts, figures, opinions, or investment techniques and strategies set out are for information purposes only, based on certain assumptions and current market conditions, and are subject to change without prior notice. All information presented herein is considered to be accurate at the time of production, but no warranty of accuracy is given, and no liability in respect of any error or omission is accepted. It should be noted that investment involves risks. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate in accordance with market conditions and taxation agreements, and investors may not get back the full amount invested. Both past performance and yields are not reliable indicators of current and future results.